Hello everyone, and welcome to the Aldar Properties first quarter 2021 earnings conference call. This is Mohammed Haidar from Arqaam Capital Research, and we are joined today by Mr. Greg Fewer, the Chief Financial and Sustainability Officer at Aldar Properties. I'll pass it on to Greg. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mohammed, and thank you everybody for dialing in relatively late in the afternoon during Ramadan on the cusp of Eid, so we'll get right to it. My name is Greg Fewer, and I'm Group Chief Financial and Sustainability Officer here at Aldar. I hope everyone's keeping well, and for those of you celebrating, wishing you a very happy Eid. So in terms of an overview, we're very happy to be reporting another solid set of numbers for the first quarter of 2021. Before we're delving into the numbers, it's important to view Aldar's performance in the context of Abu Dhabi's effective response to the global pandemic and the UAE's world-leading vaccination program. Vaccination rates are at over 100 doses per 100 people, with almost 70% of eligible citizens and residents immunized. This is enabling a smooth and sustainable recovery, which is already being reflected in improved business conditions and consumer sentiment. And we expect a bottoming out during 2021 in our most impacted segments, namely retail and hospitality. Further, the UAE federal government has taken very bold and proactive policy measures to liberalize residency and immigration rules to stimulate local aggregate demand, such as formalizing the route to UAE citizenship for expatriates, expanding eligibility for long-term golden visas, and introducing short-term remote working visas. So a very solid backdrop against which a demand-led emergence from COVID that Aldar is very well placed for is something we're looking forward to. In Q1 2021, Aldar delivered revenue of 2 billion dirhams, a 16% year-on-year increase. Another strong performance led by Aldar Development primarily drove this growth, with the business recording development sales of over 1 billion dirham for the third consecutive quarter. Income from project management also increased, with additional income coming from the commencement of work under our previously announced ADQ transaction, which was announced at the end of last year. The group's profit rose 11% year-on-year to 776 million dirhams. Net profit increased 80% year-on-year to 544 million dirhams. Adjusting for the one-off gain related to the ADQ transaction, the group's core net profit was up 47% year-on-year. I would now like to delve a little deeper into the performance of Aldar Development, where revenues for the business unit increased 47% year-on-year to 1.19 billion dirhams, accounting for almost 60% of group revenue. Breaking down the numbers, revenue from property development and sales was up 18% year-on-year to 802 million dirhams, while revenue from project management more than tripled to 384 million dirhams. Gross profit for Aldar Development was 369 million dirhams, up 28%. Development sales more than tripled year on year to 1.09 billion dirhams, pointing to a sustained appetite for quality residential units. We saw robust sales of existing inventory at mid to high level destinations, including Water's Edge, West Yaz, Miamsha, and Sariat Reserve. We're further encouraged by our latest project launch, which was Noya Viva, which sold out post the reporting period end in April, generating on its own a further billion dirhams in sales. And Aldar therefore intends to bring more products to the market in the coming months on the back of this clear pent-up demand. Demand for property on Sariat Island and Yaz Island is coming from a broad range of end users and investors. Expatriate residents and foreign buyers accounted for 35% of Noya Viva purchases, and we expect this positive trend and further customer diversification of the client base to continue. Cash collections for handovers and stage payments in Q1 2021 totaled 929 million dirhams. This was driven by significant progress on projects such as Mayan, Kadir, and Water's Edge. As of Q1 2021, 90% of launch developments have been sold, and our revenue backlog as of the 31st of March was 3.35 billion dirhams, which is flat on the fourth quarter of this year, of last year. This is primarily down to the progress made on our developments relative to sales we added in the quarter. In the coming quarters, backlog will be strongly supported by the Noia Viva launch from April and other projects that we're planning to bring to the market later in this year. Increased revenue at project management was driven by strong progress made on our government housing and infrastructure projects, most notably the Al Falah housing project and the 2454 complex on Yaz Island. Project management gross profit for the period was 90 million dirhams. Having concluded the ADQ transaction in the first quarter, we are now recording fees related to the Abu Dhabi government projects awarded to Al Dar that we announced in the fourth quarter of last year. These will ramp up in the coming quarters. These projects will provide a consistent income stream for the business, enhancing revenue visibility and providing healthy cash flows. In the first quarter, we also acted on our intent to enter the promising and strategic Egyptian market. Aldar is leading a consortium of investors that submitted a non-binding offer to acquire a majority stake in one of Egypt's leading listed real estate companies, SADC. At this stage, we're not in position to provide more other than what we said in the announcement. There's a process underway that we will let run its natural course. Turning to Aldar Investment, I would like now to turn to review the asset management performance. Revenue for Aldar Investments was 763 million dirhams in the first quarter, just 5% lower than Q1 of 2020. While net operating income came in at 403 million dirhams, relatively unchanged from last year. The resilience of the commercial and residential portfolio and the positive contribution from Provis, our property management subsidiary, and Aldar Education, our education subsidiary, mitigated the continuing impact of the global pandemic on the tourism-oriented assets, such as retail and hotels. We've also focused on generating cost efficiencies across our business over the course of the year. The commercial and residential investment property portfolio produced a 2% year-on-year increase in net operating income to 224 million dirhams. As at the 31st of March, occupancy was firm at 91% for the commercial portfolio and 90% for the residential portfolio. That's excluding a new development that we just introduced into the portfolio called The Bridges at Shams, which is just in its lease-up stage right now. The resilient performance was supported by long-term and bulk lease arrangements, a strong tenant profile, and a focus on high-quality service and engagement. Our retail business also remains relatively solid, with occupancy rates across the portfolio at 83%, in line with the fourth quarter of last year. NOI for our retail assets stood at 110 million dirhams, representing a slight decline of 4% from the year earlier. We are seeing a range of encouraging indicators, including the gradual return of sales density to the pre-COVID levels within our retail mall assets. In Q1, we announced the 500 million dirham redevelopment of Yaz Mall, which will be delivered in phases over the next 12 to 18 months. The project will repurpose 40% of the gross leasable area and create high-impact experiential retail as well as F&B spaces, while adding a total of 15,000 square meters of office space. In hospitality and leisure, occupancy rates and revenues declined year-on-year due to the global travel restrictions. However, the portfolio is benefiting from an increase in domestic tourism and the implementation of cost-saving measures that meant the gross profit for the business was flat. We expect a gradual improvement in market conditions as global travel restrictions eventually become eased, with the UAE standing out internationally due to its success in implementing highly effective testing and vaccination programs. With the principal investments business, Aldar's property services company Provis and Aldar Estates produced an 82% year-on-year rise in revenue to 43 million dirhams, while facilities management company Khidma achieved a 9% year-on-year growth in revenue to 81 million dirhams. With Provis's recent acquisition of Azteco in Dubai and its enhanced market leadership, the business is expected to grow rapidly through new contract announcements in the coming months. Meanwhile, Aldar Education reported a 24% year-on-year increase in net operating income to 39 million dirhams, supported by enhanced operating efficiencies and an increase in student numbers across the academic school year. Turning to Aldar's balance sheet remains solid. Our liquidity position is strong with 3.3 billion dirhams in unrestricted cash on the balance sheet, driven by strong cash collections, as I mentioned earlier, and 4.2 billion dirhams in undrawn committed bank facilities. In Q1, we concluded four new bank revolving credit facilities for a total of 5 billion dirhams, extending the group's combined debt and available bank commitment facility weighted average duration by 1.7 years to 5.4 years in total. These are refinancings, not new debt. Dividends from the 2020 financial year of 1.14 billion dirhams were distributed in April, so just after the year, the reporting period end, reaffirming, again, the company's commitment to delivering significant shareholder value. And finally, just a quick update on our progress across ESG and sustainability, which is something we take very seriously here. We're working on a sustainability data management system to enhance our collection and reporting of Valdar's vast array of group data on this topic. And this will allow us to better plan and execute our sustainability initiatives, increase our transparency, and make our reporting more efficient and more periodic. During the first quarter, Valdar launched an important energy management project to significantly reduce energy consumptions across 87 of our existing assets. This project is expected to save more than 90 gigawatts of electrical consumption per year, which is equivalent to reducing CO2 emissions by approximately 75,000 tons each year. In our efforts to further enhance disclosure on the quality of our reporting, we have also adopted EPRA's best practice disclosure guidelines this quarter in our annual report, and we are the first real estate company in the GCC to do so. So just to conclude, our results certainly reflect that Aldar continues to be in excellent financial and operational shape and are positioned extremely well to benefit from what we believe will be a strong demand-led growth as the UAE economy continues to open up post-pandemic and to take advantage of the very strong management of the health file here and some of the very proactive reforms the government is doing to increase foreign direct investment, to increase population, and to elongate the average stay of expatriates in this country, all for the benefit of the domestic economy. And with that, I will open the floor to questions.
Of course, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to submit a question, it's star followed by one on your telephone keypad. And if you're joining us online, please click the request to speak flag icon. As a reminder, it's star followed by one to submit a question. And our first question comes from Tahir Safiuddin from JP Morgan. Tahir, your line is now open.
Yes, hi, Greg. Good afternoon. Thank you very much and congrats on a good set of numbers. A couple of questions, if I may. First one is on the recurring portfolio. Is there any possibility just to give us some kind of guidance? How should we think about the NOI into 2021? And my second question is on the retail portfolio. I mean, we continue to see like-for-like rates going down. Occupancy remains relatively lower than last year and the year before. So maybe just some update, you know, organically, how should we think about the retail portfolio within Aldar Investments? And my third question is on the development portfolio, development sales. Are you seeing any change in the buyer mix? Are you more locals, more expats, first-time buyers? If you can just give us some update there, especially after your successful launch in April, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Sure, thanks, Tahir. So the NOI guidance. We guided flat, and I think we're pretty much headed towards that. So no reason to, I think, materially revisit or rechange or re-guide the overall NOI guidance for the portfolio. And so just following on that, just on the retail side of things. 83% occupancy. I think the important thing to note there on the retail side is we announced the Yas Mall, what we've been calling the Yas Mall redevelopment plan. So if anyone's been to Yas Mall recently, see there's quite a bit of hoardings up, which is reflective of a half a billion dirham, development program into Yas Mall. Like any landlord of retail mall space, I mean, you need to really be thoughtful and proactive in your asset management of these assets. So, we announced that in Q1, but you know, in reality, we sort of set the seeds for that already in terms of, you know, managing with our tenants, managing their renewals and replacements into what we anticipated would be this this redevelopment plan moving forward. So those low numbers you're seeing need to be looked at in the context of a significant repurposing of a number of the spaces there. So as we transition from the old mall configuration into the new mall configuration, you know, you'll be in this sort of choppy period that we see for the next quarter or so. But we're very encouraged by the leasing, program that the team is executing now in terms of the retail community's response to our announcement for Yas Mall, and it's really its view of the Abu Dhabi market. And I think one of the things that COVID's shown us is you know, some of the strengths of the Abu Dhabi market being its strong, you know, wealthy, affluent resident base. And when that's more internally focused, we see that the basket sizes increase as we get to retain more and more of the residents here. So I think that was a good reminder to everyone that there is a very healthy customer here. And you know, with thoughtfully asset managed assets like we're doing with Yas Mall with this program, you know, our target is to capture more of them here before they either leak to Dubai or leak elsewhere to manage out their discretionary spend. So basically, we see that 83% trending up, the lease, the occupancy rate, as we continue to execute the leasing program in conjunction with the Yas Mall redevelopment plan. And then your final question was on DM sales and buyer mix. So, you know, we had about, for Noia, it was around a 35% number, which was, you know, pretty much on par with what we're seeing in the Yaz in terms of expatriate purchasing, but the inquiries certainly are a lot higher, and you're going to see more launches, more launches on Yaz. I mean, the amount of noise, let's say, and the degree to which the government residency programs are starting to really drive sentiment change and really drive some behavioral change amongst the way expats think about life here, you know, that's really starting to bed in. And so we see that number increasing, in particular as we start to launch more on Saadiyat. You know, so we've flagged that the Grove is a major development of ours. I mean, Saadiyat is our most internationally marketable destination in the portfolio right now. And we're going to be bringing products steered towards that market, launch that later in 2021. So we see a lot of encouragement around skewing that number more towards expatriate and complementing the already very strong, very liquid, very a good appetite UA national buyer base that has been our bedrock for so long.
So we're still at 60-70% in terms of locals, and the rest is mainly expats.
Correct.
Okay. And just sorry, one follow-up before I give it to someone else. In terms of the fee-based project, so what we're seeing today is mainly work being done, revenue being recognized primarily on the older backlog, right? The projects that have been awarded in 18 and 19, but the ADQ projects are still in very early stages. Is this a safe assumption?
Correct. I mean, we onboarded those assets and the revenue recognition started mid-quarter. So you're not even seeing a full, first quarter run rate. And those projects are nascent. They have growth to come. So our overall guidance is around revenue recognition aren't changing on that. And I think we're very encouraged with what we're seeing thus far in terms of the scale of the portfolio, the substance in there, our engagement with government and the professionalism that's attaching to our engagement with them. Is all very encouraging and very much in keeping with what we've guided you guys on previously.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tara.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, it's star followed by one on your telephone keypad to submit a question. And if you're joining us online, please click the request to speak flag icon. That's star followed by one to submit a question. Our next question comes from Rakesh Tripathi of Franklin Templeton Investment. Rakesh, your line is now open.
Yes, hi. Thank you very much for the presentation. I just had one question. So could you remind us once as to which particular assets out of the recurring revenue generating assets are part of currently of the debt obligor, the debt servicing entity, that is?
Okay, so listen, Rakesh, you're cutting out, but I think I got the gist of your question. So you're asking the recurring revenue assets, which ones are in Aldar Investment Properties, which is our obligor under our Sukuk program, and which ones are inside and which ones are outside.
Yes.
So I think the most important asset that's outside that group is we have one building, one commercial office building called Al Mamoura, and that's just because it's on a short lease. The school's portfolio is outside, and some of our finance leases are outside, of which we only got maybe $100 million. So other than those specific assets I mentioned, everything else in the residential, the commercial, and the retail portfolio, other than those isolated assets I mentioned, are in the obligor group.
Okay. So here, when we talk about the recurring revenue business, the Aldar investment business in the presentation, so this, you already mentioned that the schools are outside, so Aldar Education is not part of it, nor is are Provis and Kidma, right?
So I'll make one more further distinction for you. When we refer to Aldar Investments, okay, that refers to the entire recurring revenue asset group. I know it's a little confusing in the nomenclature. The obligor, okay, so that means that, so a reference in this presentation to Aldar Investments is a reference to all the assets of Aldar Investment Properties, as well as schools and property management and all the recurring revenue assets. A reference to Aldar Investment Properties, which is what your question specifically was, is everything in Aldar Investment, everything in Aldar Investment, less those three assets I described and the school's business.
Sure. Thank you. That's very clear. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, as another reminder, it's star followed by one on your telephone keypad to submit a question. That's star followed by one on your telephone keypad. And our next question comes from Francis Ames of Ajeej Capital. Francis, your line is now open.
Hi, guys. Thanks and congratulations on the good results. I actually just have a slight technical question on the new segmental information breakdown. I just want to make sure I understand exactly within the revenue what's recognized as over a period of time and what's recognized as point in time, specifically in the property development and the hospitality and leisure. If you can just very quickly kind of outline how that's separated, that would be great. Thank you.
Okay, so in the property development space, the almost exclusively 100% of the revenue there is recorded under IFRS 15, but under IFRS 15, it is over time interpretation. So it used to be the case we recorded revenue, we handed over a villa with the keys when it was completed. Now we record that revenue as progress on site and construction progresses. So unit sales of completed inventory, though, are points in time.
Mm-hmm.
And the hotel hospitality business is a point in time revenue recognition as well.
That's just why I'm confused. So just so we're clear, like if I look at the Q1 numbers, it's $800 million in gross revenue for property development and sales. $660 million is over a period of time. This is the revenue recognition as you move through construction. $142 million is point in time. So those are sales of completed units. Is that the right way to read that?
Yes. Other than the unit sales, which are the completed inventory. So those will be point in time. So if something's done, then we just record the revenue when 100% when it's sold.
Okay. And then just in hospitality and leisure, that's where I'm just confused because it's about half and half between over a period of time and point in time. And that's where I'm trying to understand which is which.
Okay. I mean, the core, like when someone comes and stays at a hotel, that business is point in time.
Yeah. But then you've got $43 million or $49 million that's over a period of time in hospitality.
Hmm. Oh, that means longer
I don't want to belabor the point. Is it, sorry?
Yeah, so we have some longer stays.
That's quite a significant figure for longer stays. I guess that's why I was curious about it, just to understand the definition.
Yeah, okay. I mean, we can follow up with you after on that, just to show you the...
No problem at all, and thank you for that. Otherwise, just one question on education. You know, in terms of the outlook, obviously the aggregate revenue is basically flat year on year. You know, and I just want to kind of understand that compared with the trajectory of more students, and then just in the outlook in terms of what you're planning to add over the course of this year in terms of capacity and education.
Okay, so on education, I mean, the growth we generally see there now is not so much like inventing new schools, it's filling up capacity in our existing schools. So we've got just over 9,000 in capacity, and we're just hitting 8,000 in student numbers. So, you know, as grade 12 become grade 13 from our old cohort of schools, that's where you're seeing growth in student numbers coming. And what's great is that growth is still the dominant trend there, which is trumping, you know, people that are leaving the Emirates or trading in and out of different price points. And with schools, we've seen our schools very sticky, retaining their students.
Okay, thanks. And in terms of additional capacity expansion and CapEx there?
Very, very limited. So at this point, we're not announcing a lot of new greenfield schools. The growth there is going to be coming from the privatization program that the government has announced, and we're seeing growth in fee revenue. So the charter schools program, and the government just announced a PPP initiative where there's some DOT schools that are going to be operated on behalf of schools. The ADNOC schools that we added 18 months ago now, that's all fee-based revenue that we're seeing good growth in. And there's more of that to come as the government continues privatization program.
Okay, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, as another reminder, it's star followed by one on your telephone keypad to submit a question. And if you're joining us online, please click the request to speak flag icon. Our next question comes from Admir Malavwani of Terra Partners. Admir, your line is now open.
Yes, good afternoon. Good morning. Thank you for the call. I have a quick question. We saw a slight change in the shareholding where a new shareholder purchased about 12%. I just wanted to find out, will that new shareholder change the strategy of the group? Will they be seeking a board seat? And also in the aftermath of that acquisition, the share price sort of weakened. Would you know of any reason why that was the case?
Very public that an investor called Alpha Dhabi acquired 12% of our shares, and we think it's a very strong ringing endorsement of the Aldar business model and our overall growth trajectories, where you're seeing some, you know, very sophisticated local investors mobilizing significant cash, into our in the secondary market into our shares. So, I mean, look, we're management. You know, we put our noses down and we execute a business plan. We work with our board, and it's up to the shareholders to buy and sell our shares and sort of vote with their feet, as it were. So this is not a shareholder who's engaged with us, and we read about that transaction in the paper when everyone else did, and and the media that followed and the storylines we pick up locally here. This is an investor who's purchased shares because they like the growth prospects. And we have no formal, engagement with that with that investor.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. Now, look, in light of who they announced to who they were in the press release, we will undertake a normal analysis around related parties and have a very transparent and clear disclosure around, if we do commercially transact in the normal course with people in that group, then that will form part of our related party disclosures. But that's it. That's the only thing that's really happened since that announcement. So this is not someone who's sort of swooped in and made statements to the management around board expectations. We have no information like that. We're just running the company, and this has been someone who likes what they see, and they're putting their money to work in us. And we feel privileged and honored and humbled by such significant votes of confidence in us, and we just continue to execute our strategy.
Okay, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, as another reminder, it's star followed by one on the telephone keypad to submit a question. And if you're joining us online, please click the Request to Speak flag icon. That's star followed by one on your telephone keypad. And if you're joining us online, please click the Request to Speak flag icon. And our next question comes from Zahib Pervez of Alarian Investment. Your line is now open.
Thank you for taking my question. Actually, I just joined in. I was on another call, so probably I missed the entire presentation. But I've got one question. If you have already addressed it, I apologize for it. Could you give me the update on your Egyptian, your investment in Egypt, and where do we stand on that? And the second thing is, in the recent past, you've seen, the Egyptian pound went through a significant decline. How do you plan on taking on this risk? Do you plan on doing some derivatives, some hedging, or you want to keep this as a risk as open? Thank you.
Yeah, so just on the first part, just the update on the Egyptian, on the SODIC transaction. So that is under, there's a due diligence period that is underway right now. So we have 60 days from the announcement, the filing of the offer to conclude due diligence. It's ongoing, and we're in the midst of that process right now. So there's really not much to advise other than that process is taking its time. Company's been very welcoming and forthcoming in terms of providing information, and we're in that process with them right now. Any updates to that would be shared simultaneously with yourselves and with SODIC's shareholders. In terms of the overall Egypt pound exposure, I think at the levels that we're currently looking at in terms of capital deployment into Egypt, we are not seeking to hedge. It's been our experience to date sort of reviewing this that those hedges can be quite expensive. And we think that, by announcing Egypt as a core, element of in our new operating model that we did in January, we view that as part of core Aldar, raison d'etre and part of our strategic footprint and that, the exposure to the immense growth that we see in Egypt also comes with that that macro impact that it has on its currency. So I guess the management's view on that is that we see it as a core attribute to what is Aldar now. There's a minimal piece of capital, a minority piece of capital, that will be exposed to Egyptian pound currency and be exposed to the Egyptian pound real estate development market on an unhedged basis. Now, if the exposure started to go up significantly, that would be a reason why we would revisit that, let's call it the policy stance. But we feel strong enough about the fundamentals there that we think it's smart and good business for us, and we think our shareholders should carry that exposure in our share price.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
And sorry, just to operate, I'll just have a follow up just on Francis's question on revenue recognition in the hotel business. So just to further point of clarification. So it's long. I said it was long stay revenue recognition was overtime. It's actually long. It's that any stay of a length of time is considered overtime revenue recognition, and hence even a one or a two night stay is considered overtime revenue recognition. The point in time element is really down to the F&B business, of which it's quite significant that we have at the hotel. So that brings that proportionality more into context. So apologies for that and then for that clarification. Go ahead with the next question, please, operator.
Ladies and gentlemen, as another reminder, it's star followed by one on your telephone keypad to submit a question. And if you happen to join us online, please click the request to speak flag icon. So that's star followed by one on your telephone keypad to submit a question. And if you're joining us online, please click the request to speak flag icon. We have no further questions, so I'll hand back over to Mohammed for closing.
Thank you, Charlie. Greg, do you have any final remarks?
No, so thank you everyone for dialing in late in the afternoon, cusp of Eid. So have a great holiday, everybody, and we look forward to speaking to you in Q2.
Okay, we have a question from Tahir, if you have time to take it.
Ah, of course.
Perfect. So our next question comes from Tahir of JP Morgan. Tahir, your line is now open.
Yeah, sorry, Greg. Just one final follow-up. Can you give us just some update? I mean, lots of things are happening in Abu Dhabi, ADQ, ADNOC. It feels like, things are moving. So I just want to get maybe an update from your point of view about M&A within Aldar Investments. I mean, is there any update there? I mean, how should we think about corporate actions? You have some additions coming into the residential portfolio. You have the refurbishment of repurposing of small, but maybe can you give us some color on timeline in terms of what are we thinking about in terms of M&A, given that you've allocated a decent amount of capital for that in your FY20 results?
Yeah, we did, and look, we still feel good about deploying that. And there's definitely a lot going on here. I mean, everyone who spends time thinking about Abu Dhabi and about investing into Abu Dhabi, I mean, it is a frenetic pace of policy change, and leadership within government and government state-owned enterprises are super energized around growth, around attracting FDI, around policies that, as I said at the beginning, my earlier remarks about elongating the amount of time expats stay here, making this feel more like home, making capital, intellectual, and economic capital more sticky, and showing companies of greater size and strength into the capital markets. And so that's the attitude here. It's real. It's active. You're seeing a bit of that in us already with our ADQ transaction announcement that's going to be ramping up our fee-based revenues, upwards of $500 million dirhams. So, we are seeing the benefit of that frenetic pace, and I think that frenetic pace of activity will extend into, corporate action opportunities for us. So there's definitely, dialogues ongoing. We were deliberate in setting a guidance for it. Because that sentiment, there's a lot of extensions into real estate based on that sentiment I'm describing. And, one of our big jobs here is to make sure that we position the Aldar Properties portfolio to be the beneficiaries of some of those real estate transactions when they come up. It's an important source of value creation for our shareholders. So look, it's real. Leadership is extremely engaged down here, and we're positioning Aldar really well to benefit from that. So that guidance remains, and you know, we hope to be reporting some activity on that you know, later in the year.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Harshit Oza of Internal Securities. Harshit, your line is now open.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Just one question I have remaining. I'm referring to the additional disclosure for the provision and the sensitivity analysis in your financials, where you have given you know, different scenarios of change in the cap rates by 50 basis points and how it will impact your valuation. I mean, are these cap rates are linked to any interest rate, or what are you know, I mean, how do you, I mean, on what in which situation, you know, these cap rates are likely to change? I mean, are there these cap rates are linked to the interest rates?
Yeah, so look, so I think so the cap rate, the best way to think about those, if you're in the real estate, you know, investment business, you know, the cap rate is the rate that you know, next year's rent for a building is divided by that cap rate, and that gives you your valuation. So a number of factors drive, you know, go into that. And as a reminder, we don't make those cap rates; we take them, right? We get independent third party valuers to come in and look at all our properties. So if I had a JLL on the call right now or a CBRE who do our valuations for us, the discussion around what drives those cap rates, it includes things like scarcity value. It includes things like, you know, growth in foreign direct investment coming into the country. It includes things like long-term, you know, 10-year swap rates in terms of just like a macro interest rate variable to it. It includes, you know, what global cap rates are doing in the peer group around the region. So there's a number of different things that you know, comprise the calculus that makes the cap rate. But it's definitely much more than just, you know, what are 10-year swaps doing.
Okay.
And, you know, I think, like, and one, you know, the macro issue, the macro trend that you should be considering is that, you know, in Abu Dhabi, the spread between, let's say, 10-year swap rates, dollar swap rates, and your overall commercial real estate cap rates here are super high. Like, we have one of the largest, you know, spreads, again, it's a real estate investor sort of KPI that you, or value metric you look at, which is that spread between sovereign and commercial real estate. And here it's amongst the highest on the planet. So I think that also gives those valuers a lot of comfort knowing that there's value in these cap rates here, as there's so much liquidity on the planet searching for yield. You know, Abu Dhabi is,
right,
you know, double economy, zero taxation, free flow of capital in and out, double A rated, and 7%, 8% real estate yields. And so, you know,
right,
just from, you know, the supply demand for capital around the planet is one thing, even if global, you know, 10-year swap rates will start to go up, as people search for more yield, they're attracted to these areas where there's this strong spread to sovereign. So, anyway, sorry, it's a long-winded answer. I'm just describing, you know, the very nuanced, you know, debate that is, you know, what affects cap rates going up and down. So we talk about cap rate compression here a lot. That's the debate with these valuers. Is, you know, there's a lot of value here, and as more people start to bring capital into Abu Dhabi, that'll chip away at these cap rates, bring cap rates down, raise values of properties, raise the value of our shares.
Yeah, understood. Thanks, Rick.
Perfect. And that concludes today's Q&A, so I'll now hand back to Mohammed for closing.
Thank you, Greg, for your time today. Thanks, everyone. I wish you all happy Eid and happy holidays.